Welcome back. We're going to move into our next area of the criminal law. We discussed the substantive criminal law and procedural criminal law and what the purpose of the criminal law is in our previous discussion. Tonight, we're also going to talk about criminal punishment, what are its theories, sentencing of crimes, classification of crimes, and we'll focus on that next. First, definitions, to reiterate what that is. What is the criminal law? It's the body of law defining offenses against the community at large. The criminal justice system is those collective institutions from law enforcement to the actual penal system with corrections and jails, things of that nature, as well as the courts to determine the justice that we seek under the criminal justice system. What does the criminal law do? It's the branch of law that defines crimes and establishes punishments. And it also regulates the investigation and prosecution of people who are accused of committing the crimes. What are some of the theories of criminal punishment? Because one of one of the things that we try and do is impose criminal punishment to prevent crimes and to punish them if they occur. And that's one of the ways that you are keeping society safer. And if you break down criminal punishment, they are really five different areas for what is the purpose and the meaning behind criminal punishment. First is retribution. Second is deterrence. We don't want people to commit crimes, so this deters them. Retribution is basically we're going to make sure you don't do that again by punishing you. Restraint. That means we're going to physically prevent you from committing crimes while we restrain you. Rehabilitation. We're going to make you think about your crime and as a result of that, make you feel sorry for committing that crime. And lastly, restoration to try and make you a better person in society. Those are the theories of criminal punishment. Some are more effective than others, but we're going to go through each one of them. They work collectively. They're not in and of themselves on their own, but they work together to try and build a whole system by which crime and criminal activity is kept at a minimum. What is the first one? Retribution. The theory of retribution holds that punishment is imposed on the blameworthy party, the person who commits the crime, in order for society to attain justice and to punish that criminal. Retribution is the traditional thought of punishment. If you do this, it's the consequences argument. If you do this, you're going to get that. The purpose of retribution is to make criminals pay for their conduct. Supporters of this theory look to punishment not just as a tool to deter future crime, because you look at others and say, I don't want that to happen to me, but also as a device to ensuring that offenders, somebody who commits that crime, an offender, pays for their past misconduct. Deterrence, which is the ultimate goal of all criminal law. The purpose of deterrence is to say that if punishment is imposed upon a person who has committed a crime, the punishment will dissuade others, as well as the person who has done it, from committing that crime or from repeating that crime. There's two types of deterrence. There's specific deterrence, which is if you punish a criminal, that criminal won't do it again because they had to sustain that punishment and say, never going to do that again because of the fact that they went through that punishment. And then there's general deterrence. General deterrence, specific deterrence is that person committing the crime won't do it again. General deterrence is others won't do it. And that's where they look at that initial offender and say, I don't want to be like that person. I don't want to go to jail like that person. So specific deterrence specifically deters the individual from committing the crime. General deterrence sends a message to all people not to commit that crime because they don't want to be punished like that specific person. Restraint is simple. Criminals confined, or they're executed or incapacitated, and that their punishment will deny the criminal the ability or opportunity to commit further crimes. If you are incarcerated, you can't commit crimes because you're out of society, you're behind jail, and as a result of that, you can't commit another crime. So restraint is specifically with specific deterrence is going to make sure that that criminal doesn't commit that again. By restraint, it also serves as an example to others because you forfeit your freedom that you don't want that to happen to you. So restraint is a very powerful on many levels factor of punishment. Rehabilitation often gets a bad name. But at the end of the day, it is a humane goal of punishment. It is kind of like when you put your child in timeout that they don't want to do it again, and they think about what they did wrong and make the decision we're not going to do it. It's all about reform, and when you have rehabilitation, people seek to prevent crime by having offenders think about this and give them the education and the treatment that they need to reverse their criminal tendencies and rejoin society as a productive member. It's all about reform, as we said. And the criminal punishment says that we're going to change the way that the criminal will look at society, that they won't commit crimes again. They'll try and become better citizens, and we'll use education and social incentives to become better people. This has got a high level of religious and morality to it as a concept that we want to rehabilitate people. We're all God's children. We do make mistakes, and rehabilitation says, just learn from your mistake, correct your mistake, and go forward on it. It uses those elements of faith and religious teachings and morality to try and change the hearts and minds of those who have committed those acts. And it goes back, this was a very big push to try and do more rehabilitation around the time of the turn of the last century, around the year 1900. They changed the names of correctional facilities to be called penitentiary, because you do penitence. You would feel bad about what you did and try to reform your life and become there was a very heavy religious component to that, and try and make yourself into a better person. As I said, as of late, there's been a lot of criticism of rehabilitation because particularly with certain crimes, there is people who believe that it never works, that rehabilitation is something that is very hard. And that as society moves away from religion, rehabilitation tends to take a downfall. As it gets closer to religious principles, it gets a new life. And rehabilitation is a very valuable point of view, particularly with younger people who can learn from their mistakes. And at the end of the day, if you can get people to change their behavior, that's a great thing. Not always possible, but it is a very worthwhile effort to engage in. And lastly, restoration. Restoration looks at the crime through the eyes of the victim. And this is a very good thing to do. What this does is it tries to have the victim be the center of the approach. So when you're talking about punishment of criminals, they try to restore the victim. So if, you know, someone stole from the victim, they want that criminal to repay that victim. Now, that's not always possible. You know, the relatives of a murder victim may want to testify about how they had an impact, but you're not going to bring murder victim back to life. So this does have some degree of utility, and it can be a healing cathartic method whereby the perpetrator of the crime tries to amend his life and help those victims. But certain things, when you commit certain types of crime, you can't help the victim, and that victim is irreparably harmed, as they say. And the question is whether reparation that you pay will deter the crime, cause the offender to recognize the harm, and actually prove a solution to the harm. Sometimes it does. And to the extent that it can, it does build back character in the criminal to the extent you can do that. And it makes them realize that in this selfish world, that, you know, sometimes their actions have really harmed other people. And there is a value in getting all people to recognize that the victims of the crime matter too. It's not just the overall society and issues of societal justice. It's also the victims of crime. And that's one of the areas that restoration looks at. And it's a valuable area. Now, there are conflicts between these punishment goals. They're designed to all work together, and they can, but they can also conflict. Retribution and deterrence don't necessarily go hand in hand, but they can, and you try and work on it. Our system of criminal justice does look for ways to combine these theories when they can, get them to work together, and get the overall goals of them to be working compatibly as much as you can. Now, that's punishment. One of the things about punishment is always, how much do you give? And the crimes are classified in different ways. You have basically classifications based on severity. And in common law, you had crimes classified in two manners, things called malum in se and mala prohibita, which kind of evolved into felonies and misdemeanors. Malum in se is an act which is evil of itself, and mala prohibita is prohibited just because it's against the law. The distinction was always on severity, and those thoughts are rooted in the common law. And as time went on, we really classified them, rather than that moral concept, into the seriousness of the crime. And they classified crimes as either a felony or a misdemeanor. Now, common law, felony constituted a capital offense. If you were convicted of a felony, that meant the state could take your life as a punishment. Didn't say they had to, but they could. So one of the punishment, which was delivered by the judge when they sentenced the criminal, was if you committed murder, for example, which was a common law felony. We'll get into all the common law felonies in our next unit. But if you committed the crime of murder, the question is, do we put you in jail for the rest of your life, or do we execute you? And that was what a felony was, a common law. It was a capital offense. So you could be incarcerated for a very long period of time, or you could be put to death. And a misdemeanor, on the other hand, a common law, was punishable by a substantial period of imprisonment or a fine. Today, felonies and misdemeanors are still elevated crimes. And matter of fact, a crime has to be either a felony or a misdemeanor. That's how they are categorized. But today, that what constitutes a felony is a crime which the punishment is for more than 1 year in jail. It's not a capital offense per se. It can be, but in all capital offenses are felonies. But what constitutes a felony today is it's punishable for by imprisonment for more than 1 year. A misdemeanor, on the other hand, under the penal law in New York State, is punishable by a fine of less than a year. So that's how you grade them today. Common law was capital offense or non-capital offense. Now, within those crimes, we have something called gradation. So the more serious crime you'll have felonies and you'll have misdemeanors. But within those felony counts, you have gradations. So you can have murder in the first degree, murder in the second degree. You have felonies which are a class A felony or a class B felony. And that shows the seriousness of the crime, and their punishments are corresponding. So a class A felony gets you the highest, longest prison term, and that can be up to 25 years to life. That is a long period of time to stay in jail, and that's a class A felony. Class B felony, on the other hand, generally goes down in gradation. So you know, you're looking at a punishment of 15 years, for example. So the gradation is within the crime. So you'll have rape in the first degree, rape in the second degree, and one will be a class A felony, one will be a class B felony, one will be a class C felony, depending on all kinds of different other issues relating to the seriousness of the crime. For example, the rape of a child is a much higher gradation offense than a rape of someone who is of age, because society has said that that's a much more horrific crime. And when you get raped as a child, it's much more difficult to get over that and find a rehabilitation in your life than if you get harmed as a child. They're all horrific. They're all horrible offenses, which should have very serious punishments because they're horrible offenses. And whether it be rape or manslaughter or murder or all the felonies that we'll get to in a moment, they're all horrific crimes, which the victims undergo a life-changing moment whereby they spend the rest of their life to get over it. Society in general has said some of these things are much worse than others and deserve much higher punishments. And that's why you have the gradation system. Lastly, and you also have gradations, I should also say, in misdemeanors. A class A misdemeanor versus a class B, and that's how long, up to a year, that you'll get in jail. A class A misdemeanor will get you a year in jail. Class B misdemeanor usually get less than 6 months or a fine. And those gradations, again, say the severity of the crime. And lastly, you have wrongful conduct, which is not a crime. A crime carries with it a criminal record, follows you forever. Only misdemeanors and felonies are crimes. You also can have wrongful conduct, however, which constitutes a violation. These are petty offenses. They're called infractions or violations, and they're generally punished by a small fine. You can have incarceration. Incarceration generally is days, not years, on that. Most often the person is required to pay a fine. You know, you run over a person's yard with your car to make, tracks because you're angry at them or something like that. That generally is not going to be charged as a crime. It could be, generally that could be a infraction, a violation, and you're going to be made to pay a fine for that. So That's all we have for this section on gradation and on the theories of punishment. Next time, we're going to get in the common law of felonies, which will say, Mr. and Mrs. Lamb. See you next time.